Okay, so the purpose of this talk is somewhat to advocate a class of models that we've identified as a possible ways to produce large non-Gaussianities for inflation, but in a way which is somewhat conservative with respect to hypotheses regarding Lagrangian and high energy physics. So this work is based on some actually a collection of papers that Jean-Philippe Puzan, Tristan Brunier, and I wrote over the last few years. So you all know that generic inflation, with one field, with slow roll approximation, is not going to produce large primordial non-Gaussianities. And when I say not large, it's actually even it's going to be subdominant with respect to any other sources of non-Gaussianities induced by gravitational coupling. So there was, over the years, a kind of game was to identify some models of inflation where you would have significant initial non-Gaussianities. By significant, I mean larger than the primordial, than the mod couplings induced by gravitational coupling, which is, I mean, you cannot avoid. So over the years, a few scenarios have been identified. I could mention so curvaton type inflation, where you add an extra degree of freedom, but you want this extra degree of freedom to be first of all to correspond to massive fields and to survive long enough to dominate the energy density of the universe. So you need extra hypotheses regarding just the inflationary sector. Another type of extension which is possible is basically to change the kinetic structure of your series, that is to go to non-standard kinetic term, and this is achieved in this called DBI action. So, but what I would like to advocate now is something more standard in the sense that it doesn't rely on this kind of hypothesis. So, but it should use something, and what it uses is a larger number of fields. So now, actually, I'm not going to start with a simplest realization of inflation, at least even favored by data, which is, would be like just a massive field. But I'm going to start with another scheme, which is hybrid inflation. The reason why hybrid inflation has been introduced by Lindes, you know, 20 years ago maybe, was to avoid this VEF problem. But actually, this setting is interesting from a high energy physics point of view, because this is also what you somewhat naturally get from if you introduce supersymmetry or supergravity extension, and even in string context, in superstring context, because this is typically the kind of potential you get from brain anti-brain collision. So now, if the minimal content of hybrid inflation is this one, that is your inflationary field and another field, massive fields, the sign of the mass of which is going to change at some critical value of phi, and this change of mass triggers the tachyonic instabilities which ends the inflation. So in this case, inflation ends not so much because of the shape of the potential, but because of this change of sign. So basically, V of phi could be as flat as you want. You don't have to worry about the end of inflation, I mean, the problem. So now, what's going on if you add more fields? That is, what could you do in terms of adding fields, adding not massive fields, but adding light fields? And there are many ways, of course, to do that. And the construction I'm going to follow is the one suggested by supersymmetry, and there are actually two ways from a supersymmetric point of view to construct hybrid inflation. When I'm speaking supersymmetry, I'm really speaking about global supersymmetry, that is not even introducing supergravity terms. So it's possible with two flavors of it. One is this shape of the superpotential, and the second one, which is called D-term inflation, is this shape of the superpotential. So from a SUSY point of view, this is as simple as it can be. This is just this superpotential should be cubic in the fields, and this is the simplest cubic term you can imagine of. This is a product of two fields, of two different fields. So in terms of simplicity, this is one good thing. From my point of view, I'm not an expert in high energy physics, so don't ask me whether it's n equals 1, n equals 8, or whatever supergravity. From my point of view, it's just a neat way to build a Lagrangian which has nice properties with regard to radiative corrections. And these properties, I will need them in the following, because I will have to deal with self-coupled scalar fields. So I want these couplings to this radiative correction to behave nicely. Supergravity is one way to do it. So now, this is the ingredient of the theory, is basically this plus a few other parameters. The few other parameters are the energy scale at which you want inflation, basically. So I'm going to focus on this, to mention this is the actual shape of the potential. So it resembles the one I was mentioning for hybrid inflation. So you have this flattened field here, and two other degrees of freedom, that one of which is going to play the role of sigma I was mentioning in the previous slide. So this is the three-order inflationary, three-order potential, which has a flat direction. If you study the minima, the landscape of this potential, you will find there is a minimum at non-zero, for non-zero values of V when S is larger than a critical value. And because of this, the minimum is raised above zero. It means that supersymmetry is broken. If supersymmetry is broken, then you have radiative corrections to the potential. And this is these radiative corrections that you that gives you for free a valid inflationary model. That is, you have given shape for the potential. So this is a context in which I want to extend this theory, right? And how do I extend this theory? Just add other multiplets, that is, other scalar field, if I'm only considering the scalar part. So just I could just add a term like this, or so this is, will be a self quartic coupled field, and I could also mix this these fields with the other one. So this, I mean, as far as superpotential construction is concerned, this is something I can safely do. So if I'm too not very bold, say if I had only one extra field which is not coupled to the other fields at all, I can be in a kind of curvaton-like model. So this would be an extra degree of freedom, a massive one, and then it would may produce observable consequences if it decays at a proper rate and so on. So you have further hypotheses to make to have significant non-Gaussianity at the end. So this is another scenario I will consider. I will consider a scenario in which I add another light field, so with zero mass. Actually, I want this new. So I introduce another parameter, which is this new I. So I want this parameter to be small enough for the effective mass of this field to be less than the Hubble scale, so that it has large-scale super Hubble fluctuations. I don't want it to be too small, because if it's too small, it's just like degrees of freedom of the inflaton field, and I'm not changing my theory. I'm just mixing 2 degrees of freedom to get an effective one, which would be the inflaton. So this is not what I want, and I want to be somewhat in between. But these constraints are not very severe. When I say nu shouldn't be too large, just the only constraint I have is that nu should be less than unity. So basically, I'm going to talk about nu of a fraction of unity in this setting. So if I do that, right? I mean, this I've got a correction to the my potential, and one is given by this term, so it is self-coupled scalar field, and it's now the Mach 2 field. One is the proper inflaton field, and so S1 and S2, these new fields are mixed together or with a given angle with the other fields, and this thing is at the origin of a very important feature in the following. I will just going to sketch it here. It means that now from the generic hybrid inflation I was starting with, actually now the critical value which for which you end inflation is not given by one single phi c, critical value for the inflaton directions. It's actually a linear combination of phi and chi. So it means that the end on inflation is not triggered by only a condition on phi, it's triggered by a condition on phi and chi. And this is a mechanism by which the chi fluctuations can induce metric fluctuation, curvature fluctuations, because any delay in chi, so the transverse direction that at time of horizon crossing, I mean, during inflationary period, so this is supposed to be the describe the trajectories in phi and chi. So you have fluctuations in both phi and chi. So all these fluctuations are going to actually induce metric fluctuation at the end, because the phi fluctuations the usual way by just changing the time, the amount of inflationary phase, and the chi fluctuations because they just delay, retard, or advance, or it's a time lapse. In terms of for the end of inflation. So in other words, we've got this equation now, which relates the curvature fluctuations to the phi and chi fluctuations. This equation is written at linear order in terms of metric fluctuations, because my non-Gaussianities are not going to be induced by metric type coupling. Right? It's not a full expansion in terms of metric fluctuation. So it's linear order in both fields, but there's no reason why this field should be now a free field. That is, this field is has fluctuations because its effective mass is less than the Hubble scale. At the same time, it has self-coupling. So if it has self-coupling, it develops non-Gaussian structures that can be large, not related to the value of h directly. So they can be large, and they can be transferred into delta n. So the following is basically a description of how this non-Gaussian non-Gaussian properties in the chi field can be transferred into the metric fluctuations. One more thing, the relative weight of these two fields depends on the value of this quantity, so at different time. So here I have to make an hypothesis somehow, and the one I have to make is that these two quantities are not too different, which amounts to say that actually inflation is indeed ended by the critical value of phi, by the tachyonic instabilities, and not before. Or not. So it basically it's okay. It's in agreement with what I want to do. So now I have a well-defined problem. I have a given potential, and the question is, during this stage, that is at scales that are either sub-horizon or when these scales are crossing the horizon, that is, I start with quantum fluctuations in a quartic potential, and then a horizon crossing. And the question is, at the end, here, what are the statistical properties of this delta chi? How do I characterize these statistical properties? And because nu is assumed to be small, of course, I can do perturbation theory, quantum field perturbation theory, to compute these properties. So this is now a well-defined problem in terms of quantum field theory, and I can just do the calculation. There's one subtle thing, though, is that, first of all, you want to be sure that the radiative correction are not going to induce a large mass, so that actually the whole picture will fail, because if this field has large mass, then it means that it cannot produce superable fluctuations. And this is where the fact that we are in a supersymmetric context, where it plays a role, because the relative corrections are coming both from the scalar fluctuation and from the fermionic fluctuations. Also, these fermionic fluctuations do not have superable extension, because of the conformal coupling. they're still there, and as in Minkowski space-time, they avoid large UV divergences of the radiative terms. So we are left only with logarithmic divergences, which I think should be okay. So this is one point, and the other point is then to compute higher order correlation functions. I missed one thing. Actually, the theory is not fully determined by my potential, the one I was writing. The reason is that actually chi, so this extra degree of freedom is going to have large scale fluctuations, as in, I mean, the amplitude field. So it's going to explore different parts of its potential. And actually, what you measure is not the fluctuation. When you measure when you measure correlation function on the sky, you do not measure you do not measure ensemble average in a statistical sense. You measure ensemble average within Hubble volume, right? So basically, you have finite size effects, and these finite size effects amount to introduce the vacuum expectation value of chi at orbital size. And so these numbers are, I mean, you cannot predict them from first principle. It depends on our own realization. If you want this kind of explicit case of landscape, where this landscape is only given by two numbers. So this is an explicit landscape. It's a good thing is that you have an explicit expression for the PDF of these two variables, unlike in string theory, where there are many types of landscape, but no ideas of what is the PDF of that. So here you have the PDF, so you can actually predict what is chi bar and so on. So now my set of parameters are the following. So I have actually two values here. I should have been a bit more explicit that this chi is a complex scalar field. So you have the real part and the imaginary part. The real part, I can define it to be along the adiabatic direction. And because of that direction, I cannot just my U1 symmetry is broken. So I have to distinguish these two values. And so I have these two values plus mu square, so plus the amplitude of the self-coupling, plus h, of course. So the first exercise is test scalar field in the quasi-de Sitter space-time. How much I have? Okay. In quasi-de Sitter space-time. And we know the behavior of the four-point function. I mean, it's a calculation that can be done exactly in the sense that you can compute the four-point correlation function from the quantum era to the classical era, that is exploring the evolution of these correlation properties when you cross the horizon. And this is the result is basically shown here. So this solid line is this ratio of the four-point power spectrum, if you want, divided by a combination of the two, product of the two. And it oscillates within this is Minkowski behavior, if you want. And this dashed line corresponds to the super horizon behavior limits. And this growth here actually is encoded in this log term. If you think of it 1 second, this just nothing but the number of e-foldings from horizon crossing to time at which you compute your correlation function. So basically, it means something interesting. It means that the effective coupling constant, which determines the amplitude of this four-point function, of this reduced four-point function, is actually not exactly nu square. So basically, the amount of non-Gaussianities that we'll have at the end will be given by nu square times Ne, times the number of e-foldings between horizon crossing and the end of inflation. So this is for test. Actually, this result is valid for test scalar field with quartic potential and real field. So now, if I do the exercise in the context of a complex scalar field with a non-zero value of chi bar 1 and chi bar 2, I got this kind of result for the bispectrum and for the It's a four-point correction function. The tree spectrum here given for the given configuration, equilateral configuration, and square configuration for the tri-spectrum. Actually, you got two contributions for the tri-spectrum. One is coming, this contribution is going to vanish here if chi bar is zero. If chi bar is zero, my potential is symmetric, so there's no reason I should get zero bispectrum. So this is one case in which, by chance or by being unlucky, if chi bar is zero, then all the constraints we have today are not saying anything on this model. But it, so I'll come to that in a minute. So now if chi bar is not zero, if this is non-zero, and you have one of these, I don't remember now, one of these curves corresponds to a kind of configuration in Fourier space, and another one would be non-vanishing even if chi bar is zero. So this, to be more precise, this is the explicit expression of FNL. So now everything is put together. This is the expression of FNL for the metric fluctuation for zeta or delta n. As a function of my parameters, u square, ne, chi bar 1, and chi bar 2, which enter in the expression of the four-point function. So the thing I would like to attract your attention to is, first of all, chi bar and r, h are basically of the same order. So this is naive, at least naively, you expect this to be of the order 1. But in this, the FNL for delta n is going to scale like 1 over the amplitude of the metric fluctuation. And so this is the way I define them. I mean, and this is the way I define them, 1 over 10 minus 4. So it's 10 to the 4, right, the FNL, times a small number. But this number has not to be very small. It just has to be less than unity. So in this model, you potentially can have FNL of the order 1,000, if you want. Except we don't know. We know it's not the case. So let's be a bit more precise to finish. So these are the constraints in the new chi bar, so chi bar, in unit of h, that you would, so what you expect, the non-constraint is the constraint you expect to have with Planck. So the non-constraint is this solid line. So what, this excludes this part, right? So nu should be, so let's say, And I should also mention this dashed line here, so the thick dashed line, corresponds to the expected value of chi bar given nu. I was given before the PDF of chi bar. So if I just take the typical value of chi bar I expect from this PDF, this is how it is. So if I'm very far from this line, it means I have to fine-tune somehow things, right? In my landscape, this is not generic value for the landscape distribution. So this is where I am close to, I'm expected to be close to this line. This is excluded now. And in the coming, with Planck, this gray area would be excluded from the observation of the trispectrum, and the region above this dotted line will be excluded from the observation of the bispectrum. This is the result obtained for coupling angle between phi and chi about, I mean, equal weight. If I put more weight, that is, I put less weight to chi, I can, the constraints on nu are obviously less severe. And what's interesting also is that it's actually the trispectrum which does a better job as constraining this model compared to the bispectrum. So my message here for this class of model is do not forget higher order correlation function that might be useful in practice. And I'll finish. So this presentation was basically to advocate this class of models where you have explicit, and actually we have built them for that, to have explicit prediction for bi and trispectrum for the CMB fluctuations. And so far, large fraction of this parameter space is open, and we hope that in the future we will be able to put more constraints. Thank you.
Question?
I somehow missed the connection between the hybrid inflation models and it seemed the more general setting you were talking about in the latter half.
Oh, this, the model I'm talking about is basically hybrid inflation. Because basically the effective potential is this shape. So you have basically, so if you put alpha of this angle to zero, this is hybrid inflation. So now I'm putting new degrees of freedom. So I'm
right,
expanding
but those,
hybrid inflation.
All the parameters appearing in that potential, I didn't see them in the second part. So are they somehow hidden?
No, okay, the parameters of the inflation are such that P naught is correct, that is, they predict correct amplitude or correct NS for the power spectrum. So this is taken care in principle by V of phi. Let me go back to this. So this is basically V of phi is such that the observations are correct.